Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Nobody's going to know what that is. Absolutely nobody. Bobby, I know Ed, that's totally stumped you. Wayne, I know that stumped you.
I have no clue.
Being Farmer Bob, you probably wouldn't know what that is either. That is actually...
Being a farmer? Is that what you said?
No. That is by a band called Urge Overkill, and it's actually called The Candidate. And I picked it because they're rockers, and we'll get into that in a little bit in your book.
Very good. Very clever.
See? I do that every week. I pick a new song for the guest.
And Jim, you're really, really getting good at it. I know how much you enjoy it.
There you go. There's a little bit more. No, actually, you know, I spend like a Wednesday morning usually going through. I go through Amazon. I just go through all the songs that come into my head.
Yeah, you know, there's plenty of stuff out there. I mean, you know.
Oh, my God. It's everywhere.
You know, and it's so easy to pull the stuff down these days.
I know. And the voice you're hearing is Bob Brill. He was our new co-host.
Thank you.
So let's welcome Bob to the Writer's Block. What do you think?
Cool.
Yes.
Oh, right. You know, being a guy in radio, you never see the, hear the applause. So
no.
It's like,
no.
You know, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. My head is spinning.
Of course.
I'll never be able to say my wife, you know. Not know who came home tonight.
Well, if Bob's voice is familiar to all of our live listeners out there, and one's in Southern California, Bob is a on-air personality in Los Angeles. I will not say the radio station.
Okay.
Unless I can.
No, you can. You
oh,
can.
He's a personality on KNX 1070. Yeah. So we happened to grab him and drag him in here and with no remuneration.
and that's the best part, which means I can be free.
That's
oh,
right.
I am free. Well, excuse me. Yeah.
This is LA Talk Radio. You can say what you want. So we want to welcome Bob to the show. And, of course, we have on the other side, we have Bobby Jean Bell sitting there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And she's out there doing what she does in Albuquerque.
Bobby, I got to ask you, how do you like Albuquerque? You've been there, what, almost a year?
I like it. We're getting, you know, it's beginning to feel, I would say, a little bit like home. There are still mornings I wake up and it takes me a few moments to realize that there are no palm trees outside the view, wonderful view that we had from our Santa Clarita home. But otherwise, there are some, you know, similarities. We've got some friends here and we're very excited to discover a whole new world.
I know the air is clear, and that's one of the best things about it.
Yes, and no traffic. People have told us, you know, not to drive at certain times because there's traffic, and we've actually driven during those times to just see what traffic is, and it's not traffic.
What is
there's
traffic?
No traffic here.
Two Volkswagens and an 18-wheeler?
Yeah, kind of like that.
A couple pickup trucks, you know. Gun racks. Things.
Have you had to get up in the morning and sweep the rattlesnakes off your porch yet?
I'm sorry, say again?
Have you had to get up in the morning and sweep the rattlesnakes off your porch?
No, we haven't had that yet.
Yet. Don't hold your breath.
Have you spent a cold morning in Albuquerque yet?
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, we first moved in
really
the latter
cold.
Part of December and into January, and we, you know, driving in the evening and watched the temperature go down and down and down and you know, hit Albuquerque, and it was, you know, 20 degrees. And
I remember when I
like,
was
like, oh, there is actually winter here.
I remember when I was just a yonker. I had to sleep in a parking lot in my car in Albuquerque one night.
Oh.
I think there was like, I still don't know where my fingers went to. It's so cold.
Well, it was probably wrapped around that tequila bottle.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't bring any tonight. I should.
Oh, yeah, man. I have to tell our guest over here is Wayne Evershaw. He's sitting over here listening to all this nonsense. Bob, we were at a cowboy festival about two weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And yeah. Bob, on Sunday morning, Bob brings in this tequila that is
almond
tequila. I've never had almond tequila. Have you ever had almond tequila?
I've never had almond tequila, and I can't say I've had many mornings with tequila, Bob.
I have to tell you.
It's like the old Christofferson song, Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Where was the tequila on Saturday?
He was hanging out little tiny shot glasses with almond tequila. And then, he goes,
Puerto Vallarta.
Yeah.
My wife brought him a
And then he goes, well, you want some more? I go, more, please.
Well, I mean, and then last year, you know, he brought us Turkish Delight, as I recall.
Oh, that's right, too, yeah. Because the character in my book, Lancer Hero of the West, that's his thing.
Yeah,
where was that this year, Bob?
Well, it was buried over the tequila.
The tequila trumped. The tequila trumped the Turkish Delight. Okay, anyway. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, your host, and of course, Bob Brill is sitting across from me. Bobby Jean Bell is on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm going to skip one ad tonight and go directly to Out West. Yay. Is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include, but not limited to, Rock Mountain Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com, or you can go to www.scvoutwest.com. Enter code WB100 and receive $10 off your order. Or you can call toll-free and really talk to the lovely, charming lady that is on the phone with us right at the moment. And that number is 877-340-9378. Okay, and since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM Truckload and LTL, that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they work hard to make your full truckload shipping or LTL experience unparalleled using their customized traffic movement program. So call TFM Truckload or Target Freight Management, LTL. Call them today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski for Truckload or any of the fine account managers at 888-653-1323 for their LTL service. Tell them you heard it here in the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. Or if you prefer, you can go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Okay, let's get into Mr. Evershaw, who is sitting here in our studio looking all the world like he wants to talk about a book that he just finished, or not just finished, but finished September last year?
It was published late November of last year.
Okay. Oh, here, this is yours, incidentally.
Okay.
That's nice
coffee mug here.
Yeah, that's right. And it says, of course, the Writer's Block on the back. And
very nice.
Yeah.
If you're really good, he'll even pour some coffee in it.
Well, no, not me. I don't do that. But, you know, somebody at home might.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Wayne has written a book called, what is the name of your book?
Roll the Dice.
And
it's a novel. It's set in a political campaign. And I tried to write a protagonist, the candidate. He's a rock and roll star,
right.
Tyler Sloan. He's in the Rock Hall of Fame. And he turns 50, and he sort of reassesses his life. And the senator from Nevada dies, and he decides, I'm going to run for United States Senate. He just makes a sudden announcement, not a Democrat, not a Republican, runs as an independent. And because he's so famous, I when people ask me, what's your book about? And they have it's a rock star running for the United States Senate. And they pause, and I'd say, well, what would Bon Jovi's campaign be like? What would Springsteen's campaign be like? It'd be an unusual campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a book with a unconventional, different type of campaign and different type of candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I got to ask you a question about that, because I know you come from a background in the political field. Were you able to draw stuff from the candidates and council members that you worked with in the past to throw in that book?
Well, what I did, I worked for two Los Angeles City Council members. I ran their campaign, was chief of staff at City Hall. Two wonderful council members. So that experience or those experiences, I served on government commissions for many years, Los Angeles Convention Center Commission and others. I'm an attorney. I just drew everything. And in politics, you do meet some different characters. I think everything's heightened.
Right.
The great, the bad, the good, bad, and ugly. I think you see it all. And you read today's internet or headlines. And when I was taking writing classes at UCLA to learn how to write a piece of fiction, but the writing coach at UCLA, who's a New York Times bestselling author, said, "Show us something we haven't seen before." So I started writing this years ago, and I thought, well, that's okay. I could come up with something like that. Now it's harder to have something you haven't seen before because everything's going on.
Right.
I mean, Democrats, Republicans, doesn't matter.
Right.
You get some weird stuff going on.
Right. Right.
I guess the thing that you haven't seen before is compromise, right?
You don't see,
don't see that anymore.
You don't
all.
See compromise. And you know, when I was drafting the book, I wanted a character that I would root for and the reader would root for. So I made Sloan an independent because I thought, well, you make him a Democrat, irritate half, you Republican, irritate half. So I made him an independent, and I frankly would like to see somebody run for major office without being affixed to a party label.
And besides that, you run the risk of having Devin Nunez pissed off at you. And
or getting a tweet in the middle of the night if somebody doesn't like it.
Wayne, can I ask a quick question? How important was it to have this book take place in Nevada rather than, you know, a different state? What was...
Yes, Bobby. What I wanted, I originally started writing it about a candidate running for mayor of Los Angeles because I've lived in Los Angeles all my life. Then I wanted to go bigger. So I wanted to go statewide. And I've been going to Las Vegas since I was a little boy with my parents. I go now. I've been going for decades. I've taken my two children there, and my brother, my wife, et cetera, et cetera. And I just think Las Vegas is a fascinating city. And I've also had some business dealings in northern Nevada, and that has a whole different vibe. It has a little more western vibe, especially if you get out to Fallon and Ely and cities like that. So I think Nevada is just a fascinating place. And if you drive, you know, you can drive for a half hour, an hour, and not see a house. I mean, you're not in the middle of the desert.
Right.
So, you know, see other cars, you'll see trucks. But so Nevada, to me, is just a fascinating state.
Yeah. You can drive. You can drive for an hour, and you see nothing but wild Mustangs.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Along, was it Red Rock Canyon? Down.
Yes. Yes. And Red Rock, actually, I have a scene in my book. I have the candidate go up to... Red Rock, it's a national preserve.
Right.
It's gorgeous. It's a half hour outside of the Strip.
Right.
And you're out you forget where you are.
Yeah.
You're just up there. The rocks are beautiful.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous
it's
area.
It's scenic. It's tremendous.
I think as a reader, it made for a very interesting backdrop, whether you've been there or not. We've been there several times, but certainly not over the years. You make references to the Sands and, you know, old Las Vegas, new Las Vegas, the history of the area. But we get into Indian lands and we, you know, you bring in the kind of the history of the state in a variety of ways. And I, as a reader, found that really interesting.
Well, thank you.
You have that one meeting where they're in front of the area where all the abandoned neons, like the neon museum.
Yeah, the neon graveyard,
you know,
right,
the,
yeah.
I think how interesting they're having this meeting in the middle of the night in front of this place, you know, that has these signs.
Well, it's a fascinating place. It's called the Boneyard or the Neon Museum.
Right.
And for the listeners, it's a lot. It's nothing fancy, but it has these old neon signs from Las Vegas.
Right.
The 40s, 50s, 60s, hotels, liquor stores, dry cleaners. And it's just a fascinating place. So I was thinking of different scenes, where to place, again, Tyler Sloan and his campaign manager in that scene. And I just always was fascinated by that place.
That took me back quite a ways. you know, visit, as you mentioned, you visiting as a child. I remember visiting as a child with my parents, too, across the country several times. And I'm sitting there saying, oh, my gosh, there is that place, isn't it? You know, where all these all these signs have gone to die.
Yeah.
You know, but the one thing I wanted to mention was that the nice thing about Nevada, too, is really you only have one city. You know, you do have Reno and other places, but really, you know, Las Vegas is it. And you based mainly the whole thing in Las Vegas, which I imagine made it easier for you on your research and stuff.
It made it a little easier, and I wanted it Las Vegas focused, if you will. I think if you were doing a campaign, you'd probably focus on Las Vegas and second Reno, Carson City a little bit. But Las Vegas is booming. The population is booming. And to me, look, it's a work of fiction. It's not a campaign manual.
That's a good thing.
But God, it isn't.
Yeah. I could write that, but it would be a little boring. But, you know, Las Vegas, there's no city like it. I mean, you go around the world. I'm not a world traveler. I've been to Europe. And it's people, you know, you go to Paris and mention Las Vegas, and the people know what you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, it's the population base in Nevada. It's right there in Clark County. Well, most of the population in Nevada lives in Clark County, so, or environs.
Right. So. And now it's becoming a city. The convention business is number one in America.
Absolutely.
And you can see why. I mean, if you're an optometrist, Bobby, you're now in Albuquerque. If you're the optometrist of Albuquerque, you want to have a convention, well, they could go, well, let's go to Las Vegas. Yeah. Sounds like fun.
That's like my cousins come from Italy. And the first couple times they came, I was like, okay, we'll come visit you. Second time we said, we're going to send you a couple of days in Vegas. And now they don't even come see us. They just go straight to Vegas.
Of course.
Well, there's nothing like it. I mean, that's why.
Absolutely.
Jim, there's nothing like
no,
it.
No, so. No. But, you know, your protagonist, Tyler
Sloan. Yes.
A great candidate, but not a very nice guy.
Well, I try to make him.
I think he's a pretty nice guy.
He's complex guy.
He's a male trollop, primarily.
Well, he was.
Yeah.
No,
he was. That's true.
Importantly, he was. What I tried to do.
Did I hit a nerve?
What I tried to do was have this guy a rock star in his younger days.
Sure.
So a rock star in the 80s when Sloan was big and, man, you know, there were groupies back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
There
so,
were.
Sloan partook of that a pleasure. But he's matured. He's got married. He's got a daughter. And he's settled down. Yeah. And he's seeking. Part of the theme of the book is seeking sort of meaningful female relationship to a guy who's had a lot of one-night stands.
And unfortunately for him is that a lot of it has followed him into his campaign.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's really that's part of the that's kind of really interesting because you know you look at other people and a lot of their life their prior life follows them historically through their lives, you know, there are pieces of it that people are never going to forget.
Well, if you look at campaigns or really anything, but if you look at political campaigns today, your past can come back to haunt you.
And it will.
And so you look around and what people did 20, 30 years ago, all of a sudden, boom, it's out there.
Right.
Well,
right.
I'm looking at this thing and I'm thinking, Gary Hart.
Yeah.
And, you know, who dared the media to, you know, follow him around, and we did. And guess what? We found him on the monkey business in Bimini with Donna Rice.
What a great boat, too.
Yeah. You know.
That was one of the great names. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to name a boat, you name it Monkey Business when you're on there with a young lady. I mean, it's just
Monkey Business.
And Gary Hart was so, he was such a good candidate in so many ways. Right. I remember Gary Hart, senator from Colorado.
Right.
And talented guy, but he just had the problem. He just couldn't stop. And like you say, he invited the press, yeah, follow me. It's like bizarre.
Yeah, and your Sloan character says, oh, do I want to go there? Do I want to go there? Yeah, I got to challenge. And the thing I like about him is he is honest enough to say, okay, we're going to challenge this. We're going to go out and do this, and we're going to let everybody know. Outside of a few things.
We're going to get in front of it.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I really liked about the character.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I learned in politics, everybody who worked in politics, if there is a problem, you got to get in front of the story.
Right.
Because if you wait, the story just kills you. Mm-hmm. So what Sloan and his people tried to do, get ahead of it.
Right.
And it was a little twist and turn there, but again, the past comes back.
Well, the politicians could take, you know, a lot of schooling from this book.
Well, you know, it's funny. If you ran a campaign and you just went places, Sloan is famous, so he can go play,
right.
He can go to a bowling alley.
Right.
He can go to Starbucks and people will respond to him. So if you did have a rock candidate or somebody with some celebrity status, and there's a lot of people running, the woman from Sex and the City is running for governor of New York right now.
Yeah, what's her name? Cynthia Nixon.
Nixon, very good. And if she walked in a room...
You watch Sex and the City all the time.
Yeah, I do.
It was a good show.
I do.
So, but if Cynthia Nixon walks in a room, people know who she is. It's like, hey, they may call Miranda. You know, they may call her by her
state
name.
Now, see, I didn't know what her name was on the show. You did.
Oh, I did. I did. Yes.
Stick with us, Bobby. We're not going anywhere.
I'm here. I thought it was also interesting, you know, some of the detail you put in. They give him some lessons about how to shake hands. And at first he's a bit indignant because he's been greeting the public and thousands of people for years. But it's a little different when you're running the campaign. And I thought that was really interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about how to shake hands when you're going to shake 10,000 hands in a day?
Well, I managed a couple of campaigns for Los Angeles City Council members. And I've been next to them when people just glom onto you and won't leave. And whether it's a handshake, mm-hmm. it can be that just a firm handshake or just handshake doesn't. It sticks on, if you will, or just to get in your face and they keep talking. And I know a lot of times I've had to sort of, you know, tell the two candidates and city council members, okay, councilman, we have another meeting. We just ad lib. You got another meeting at 2:00. We got to get going. Okay, thank you, Wayne. But yeah, what I had with Sloan, like I said, Bobby, we're all used to shaking hands, but he's so famous, people want to touch him and grab him. And I thought of something that happened to me when I was a young guy here in the San Fernando Valley. In 1968, I went to see Bobby Kennedy at Los Angeles Valley College. And I didn't get in the gym, but his speech was piped outside to everybody who was listening. It was 1968, soon before he was assassinated. But Bobby Kennedy then gets in a convertible, and just like you see in the movies or documentaries of Bobby Kennedy. And he's standing there, and people are holding him down and people are grabbing him, including myself. I went and touched his hand and it was so thrilling. But I thought, boy, that Bobby mania, that really was something. I think that always stuck with me because it was so important in my life, just that little brief 30 seconds. But it stayed with me. So with Sloan, he gets people glom onto him and stick with him. And I thought, if Sloan's shaking that many hands a day, I did read years ago how Teddy Roosevelt shook something like thousands of hands mm-hmm. one day at the White House. People would just come in and Teddy would shake their hand over and over and over. And, you know, I'm not a germaphobe, but that's not exactly a healthy proposition right. if you're shaking right. a lot of hands. So he is advised by his campaign manager how to shake hands, how to sort of get in and get out. And do not use antiseptic wipes in front of people. You look kind of like a nut.
There's one way to stop that. Is you just sneeze into your hand. Yeah.
That may get people to move away quickly.
That's in his book, incidentally, The World According to Brill.
Okay. Well, Brill, good idea, but I'll pass on that one.
Did you have challenges writing dialogue, or did it just flow real easy for you?
Thank you. Dialogue was I in the first couple of drafts, I had too much dialogue, and it's interesting when you write. And this is it's a great show, The Writer's Block, because it caters to writers, and that's terrific. So people who listen and want to write. Once it's the old saying, to write is to rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on my own, did not have an agent, did not have a publisher, and I entered my book in a Kirkus Reviews contest at the end of 2013. And I remember I won. I got an email sitting at the airport. I was going to see my son in college. I won an award, one of the best unpublished works of 2013. I was so excited, thrilled. I thought, okay, I'm done now. I'm done. So I got back and I started writing agents with query letters. And I got some interest. Yeah, send us 10 pages, send us 2 chapters. A few more liked it, send us the whole book. And three agents liked it, and I was in contact with them, mainly email. And an agent said, yes, I like the book. I want to represent you, but you got to rewrite it. It has to be edited. It has to be edited. It just won an award. So she said, yes, if you want it, you know, I'll represent you, but it's got to be edited. So she had a person that she put me in contact, the woman in Florida I never met. She edited it, did some revisions, submitted it. The agent said, nah, it needs a little more tightening. Edited it again the second time in Florida, got it back. And then the agent took it to publishers. One publisher liked it right off, and she said, it's great. Needs a little editing. So the publisher's editor went at it. So it took three or probably four edits after I thought I was done, after I won an award. So you got to keep going. You got to keep going. You got to keep going. And I'll tell you, if I can, just a 30-second quick story. I had the best break. This was tremendous. I go to this. I had won the award. I thought my book was fabulous. And I go to this cocktail party, social party at a friend's house. This guy introduces me to somebody, and this guy, Peter. And I said, okay, Peter, what do you do? He said, well, I was head of buying and selling at Universal. I thought, well, I'm not quite sure. Peter, that sounds great, but what exactly is buying and selling at Universal Studios? He said, well, I was in charge of, you know, buying the novels, magazine articles, plays, optioning them, and then we'd, you know, make the movies. You know, some worked out, some didn't. I said, well, okay, well, Peter. And his friend said, well, Peter's way too modest. Peter, tell him some of your hits. I said, Peter, what movies would I have heard of? He said, well, my big claim to fame is I found the novel before it was published called Jaws. And I said, Peter, that's a pretty good find. Worked out pretty darn well.
Wow.
So Peter and I became friends. He's a wonderful man, Peter Safier. He was at Universal and Paramount. And he co-produced Scarface and some other big movies. Anyways, I showed my book to Peter, and he said, let me skim through it. So he skimmed through it. And even again, after I won the award, he said, you know, it's your book. Do what you want. But here's a couple of ideas. And he gave me a suggestion that really heightened the conflict. So the number one word of the evening is conflict. So I instilled more conflict. Sloan's father in my draft won the award. He was deceased, and Sloan was trying to please his dead father. Gotcha. And Peter's advice, and it was great advice, make the father a central character.
Sure.
Have that father-son conflict, because everybody relates to a parent-child conflict. Mother-daughter, father-son, sure. Whatever it may be.
Sure. Well, his father also was a very popular governor of Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Governor of California.
Yeah, and after reading the book, I couldn't imagine the father being deceased, to be honest with you.
Okay. Yeah.
It plays so well.
Yeah,
it
really does.
Part of the story.
Thank you.
I'm going to take a couple seconds here and use up some more money. So hang tough, guys. Don't go away.
I'll roll the dice.
No, Bob. You can't roll the dice. Just relax and just take it easy. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? Well, it is. For your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for a one-night or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better, and we always know the answer is your dog's. So check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And we are back, and we have in the studio Bob Brill. We have on the line Bobby Jean Bell, and our guest is Wayne Avershaw. And if you want to call in and talk to Wayne, the number here is 818-602-4929. And again, that number is 818-602-4929. You're a busy guy, Wayne.
Well, thank you. I I practice law. I write, and that's a lot right there.
Well, yeah, it is. And my question was going to be, how do you find time, or how did you find time initially to even start writing a novel? I mean, even though we're only what
320 pages or 330 pages, something like that.
See, it's just under 100,000 words.
Yeah, that's a lot of work for somebody who's a busy lawyer and a campaign guy and a politician guy. And
well, one thing I discovered about Roll the Dice, and may I say, Bob, it is available on Amazon. Now that you ask Jim and Bob, it is available on Amazon and many Barnes & Noble stores. Not all, but many. And but check it out on Amazon. And I enjoy the practice of law, but I enjoy writing a novel a lot more than writing a legal document.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
Yeah, an easement is not as exciting as a novel.
Oh, no.
So I enjoy this process more. And I'm at a point where I really have begun writing a sequel. And, I just enjoy it a lot more than practicing law, frankly.
You wrote 100,000 words. What made you go to 100,000 as compared to, most people want to go to like 80?
Yeah, I looked online. Look, I was a novice. I didn't know anything. I didn't know how long it should be. And I just started writing and editing myself and doing it. And it was about 120,000 so words. And I looked online, so that's too much. So I set like a magic arbitrary number, get it under 100,000. Mm-hmm. So I did. I think it's 95 and change. But I think you can be in the 80 to 100 range.
Mm-hmm.
You can be probably a little less. And if you can tell your story, if you can do it in 60 or 70, go for it.
Yeah.
I think if you get too long, unless you're, Thomas Wolfe or somebody, it's just too much.
I think after a certain amount of reading, you kind of start to lose your reader a little bit. I mean, no matter, the story could be huge, like Ben-Hur.
Right.
I could not get through Ben-Hur. I mean, I got to where he was rowing on the ship, and I pretty much had to give up.
Yeah.
Besides the fact I already knew how the book ended, yeah. But still.
You saw the movie.
I saw. Hey, Charlton Heston, hey.
Did you get through Moby Dick?
Who, me? Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty long.
Well, yeah, it's not as long
War
as
Peace,
Ben-Hur.
War and Peace.
I don't think I ever got through War and Peace.
I don't even think I've started War and Peace.
It's so good.
I could not get through Great Expectations.
I actually started reading an Ayn Rand novel.
Oh, yes.
And then I started using it as a doorstop because it was so big.
Well, in junior high school, I remember being assigned reading the book I just mentioned, the Dickens book.
Great Expectations. You're welcome.
And it was so funny because our teacher at the time, she could tell through the first two lectures that we were so freaking bored.
Oh.
We were just like, and these are like eighth graders. She brought in the movie and showed it so we could at least get to a point. She didn't show the whole movie. She brought it up to where maybe the last three or four chapters.
Gotcha.
So we all watched the movie, went home, read the last three or four chapters, and we were ready for the test.
Sure.
But it was a smart move because junior high kids, as much as I love to read and want everybody to read, especially novels and nonfiction, and it's just something that's very difficult to do at times when you're talking about the classics.
Really?
I think your teacher was very clever.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you first started writing, was this something you always wanted to do?
No, it wasn't. No, it was not something I wanted to do. I think what happened was, 10, 12 years ago, I like novels. I enjoy novels, legal novels, Grisham, Balducci, Michael Connelly, so the popular writers. And I saw a review of a novel about politics. It was set in Chicago. And I thought, oh, I want to read. There was a good review. I want to read this book. And I got about halfway through, and I thought, I could do this. If this gets good reviews, I have a decent ego, I guess. I could do this. So I started taking UCLA extension classes. Mm-hmm. On writing, beginner, intermediate, advanced, and then I took a small group, sort of a writer's type of group, and that's when it started. And it's interesting, Jim, you don't really, as a writer, it's a very enclosed, introverted, in a way, profession. You're sitting there just writing away. But then you go to a writer's class, a writer's group, and then I remember you have to read, we're all going to read the first page. And once you put that first page out there, and you I'm listening and watching these other people. She's pretty good. He's not so good. That's good. That's great. Now it's Wayne's turn. And when you read it, that's when you're on stage. That's when it hits you. Either it's really good or it needs work, and it probably needs some work, but that's where you're exposed somewhat. But yeah, you have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to do it.
Well, I've never known a writer to write it down, publish it, and walk away. You know, they all require work.
All require, yes.
I mean, virtually, I bet you, and I didn't look, but I bet I could open your book and I could find a typo in it someplace.
Okay, I hope not, but I would tell you this to
let's put it this way. He paid for all those editors.
But, you know, it just happens.
Yeah,
and you can't catch them all.
Well, I'll two quick comments. One, if I picked it up today and started reading it, I would go, you know, I changed this. I tweaked this scene a little bit.
Everybody does it.
Because, you know, you just do it. You just would. You know, it's not, you know, it's hard to be perfect. So it's not perfect.
Right.
But, you know, I wrote this long legal document. It's over 40 pages. Los Angeles City Councilman read it a couple of years ago. And he looked at me, said, he was very proud. He said, you know, there's a typo here. So there's a typo. My assistant and I, you know, have gone through the document dozens of times, spell check, but there was. I had a trial instead of trail.
Oh.
I see
as
that.
As writers of Western books, how many times have we done that?
Yeah. No, you could do it so easily. And spell check doesn't know.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't know. Yeah.
I saw it one time with somebody wanted to just refer to the famous, you know, song written by Dale Evans, Happy Trails, but they wrote Happy Trials.
I thought, well, that's
also an interesting interpretation.
Yeah. Right.
Only if the lawyer wins.
Yeah, happy trials.
It's like the old sign. It says, violators will be persecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
There you go.
I gotta ask you, have you started writing the screenplay or at least thinking about it?
Yes, I'm thinking about it. I will not write the screenplay. What I worked on actually today, my agent and I have gone back and forth a couple of times on the pitch for the film rights. So we're finalizing that now. Hopefully next week or maybe the week after she'll be hitting it where she'll be sending it out. And I wrote it. I'm a visual guy. I wrote, I think, a visual story. So I think it would translate well to film. And we'll see. I hope so. I would not write the screenplay. I would just write another novel and keep going there.
Well, to be honest with you, you know, I'll be really honest with you. As a writer of screenplays, it reads like a screenplay.
Okay.
I think it does.
Yeah,
it really kind of does.
Yeah,
it's very, like you said, it's very visual. It jumps out at you. There's not a lot of hidden stuff that you can't bring out, you know. As a former member of UCLA Extension, I applaud you.
Okay. Almost Bruins.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, come on. It's the only LA team. I can't even vote for an LA.
I hear you.
I'm from Pittsburgh. Okay.
Okay. Oh, no, yeah, that's right. You are.
Yeah. It's only Pittsburgh stuff.
You know. The name of the show is The Writer's Block, and we do that for a reason, because it can be a malady to some writers. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
I'm fortunate and honest to say I've never had writer's block. I've had times where I've started on a path, then decided I'm going to change that character or that scene or what have you. But no, I have ideas. I outline the first book and the second book. I do an outline and I cut and paste. Chapter 1 becomes chapter 2 and 12 becomes 6 and things like that. So I kind of organize it and then I just keep writing. Because I learned in law school, you just keep going. You got to keep going. You got to write this stuff, and you got to get it out.
Do you find yourself writing in sequence all the time, or do you sometimes have a good idea and you think, oh, wow, that'd be great? So you go and you write that scene and save it and then plug it in where it needs to go.
Okay, that's a great question. I do both, actually. I write in sequence, but occasionally I do have a great idea for later in the book. And I have on my computer the outline of the entire second book. Mm-hmm. So I will go to chapter 20. I'll look around. Where will this go? This goes in chapter 20. And I'll write like bullet points on the computer just to keep it there, keep it fresh, because we all forget stuff. Mm-hmm. And then go back and continue with chapter 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. How many people have we had now, Bobby, that have never had writer's block?
Maybe five.
Yeah, I think probably five or six.
Yeah.
That's most people have had it to a degree of some sort or another. Like myself, yeah, I call it writer's pause.
Yeah.
Well, that's been the nicer way to say it.
Exactly.
A little brief pause.
Yeah, I did have a little pause going on. And, you know, when you have a busy life and you're trying to sit down and write, my brain is going everywhere.
Right.
And it's really hard to focus on that screen and keep your thought right on that screen with the character that is now talking.
Yeah, it's all those YouTube videos you keep pulling up.
Oh, I do that. Have you been in my office?
Yeah, cats and dogs.
No, I actually pull up YouTube videos on this young girl in Germany. Her name is Sina, and she's a drummer. And if you haven't seen her, she's like 17 years old.
I don't think I've ever seen a Sina.
Sina, yeah. Her name is Sina, S-I-N-A, and she is just a drummer. She covers everything, and the girl is just marvelous.
And that's your home away from home.
Well, that's kind of like where I go to, and then my wife comes in and says, turn it, or shuts the door. You know, yeah. I get distracted easily.
Yeah.
I think the key to my writing, and I've been on other shows where people have asked me about the writing process, and I was at Vroman's bookstore in Pasadena.
Mm-hmm. Great place.
Great bookstore. And I will tell you, my book signing did not draw as well as Hillary Clinton, who preceded me by about 2 months. You know, mine had some people, but hers had, like, lines and Secret Service. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, but what I do, and maybe others do it, but I have in my car, in my console, I have a little pad. If I think of something, I'll just make a couple of notes. In my office, you know, in my, I'll just make, if I think of something, or if I'll be at lunch, I'll see something or somebody who, that's an interesting, you know, I just, he's an interesting woman, man, what have you, and I just will quickly try to make a couple of notes to keep it fresh, so I go back to it.
Yeah. I found out that I use my phone.
Your phone's great.
Voice recorder on your phone, and I'm driving down the street, same as you. We're driving. Yeah. Something comes to mind, or a storyline comes to mind. Just pop my phone and just hit the record on the voice recorder. Just talk into it for 30 seconds, and then save it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a great tool.
It's a good tool.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm sitting here taking notes to ask you about on my phone. So it's like replaced the old reporter's notebook. It's so great.
Oh, the phone's replaced 20 different pieces in our life.
Speaking of which, I was kind of law do you practice?
I do. Okay. I try to practice. I do practice what I know. In other words, I worked at City Hall, so I understand how the city works and how city and counties work in terms of land use, zoning, real estate, governments issuing contracts. So I understand how the city council and county board of supervisors work. So I represent clients before government bodies. I've been all over. I will tell you, and back to my book, when I was in a real estate development company, I spoke before the Sparks, Nevada Planning Commission and City Council, and there aren't many attorneys in Los Angeles who could make that claim to fame. But Sparks is a decent-sized city outside of Reno. So I've gone before a lot of government bodies, so I file applications for clients. There's restaurants here in the Valley I've represented. I've represented almost every kind of business, gym, billiard parlors, nothing too crazy. But a lot of real estate activity. But again, it's writing's more fun, Bob.
Is your second novel I hesitate to say who wins the election because we know because we read the book.
We're not going to do a spoiler alert.
We will not do a spoiler alert. I hate those. Yeah. But is it going to continue on the life of Tyler Sloan? Will he appear in the second novel?
He will appear in the second novel, and again, write what you know. And since I feel I know politics, I like political as a background. You know, you draw out a character who's nuanced, who has a past, who has ups and downs, mm-hmm. father, son, mm-hmm. his daughter. He's protective of his 13-year-old daughter. But yes, it will be a political novel.
You know, one of the things that interests me, and we can talk about this because it happens so early on in the book. I think it happens a couple of chapters in. And then Tyler Sloan brings up the sex tape of him and
oh, yeah.
one, He had a three-way with one of the other candidates. We won't say whether it was. But and I thought that was fascinating that to bring that in because, you know, obviously things like that do happen, but so prominent in a race like this, you have something like that coming up, and a lot of the story then evolves around that. And did you have any hesitation in going there with that?
Short answer is yes. I wanted to do two things with the book. I wanted to have some sexual intrigue, tension in the book, but I did not want to have it graphic or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have two sons in their 20s. I guess I wanted them when they were, you know, whenever I started this, when they were 18, 19. I didn't want them to, what's dad up to now, you know? Yeah. I didn't want that.
Show us your tape, Dad.
Write what you know.
One of my first attempts at a novel that I won't talk about, I showed to my daughter, and she goes, Dad, I don't want to read this. I said,
oh. Thank you, honey.
Yeah, it's a thin line. You got to be careful, but you know, sex does sell, and you want a little sexual tension. And again, if I'm true to the character, he was a rock star. So when people say, you know,
you can't get away from it. So you might as well. If you're going to be true to the character, you might as well be true to the character.
Yeah, and you did. Yeah, I wanted to be true to the character,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Bobby.
No. Well, I was just going to say, I really like Bree. Is she going to show up again?
Well, thanks. I like Bree too, and I wanted to have a strong
really good cheese. If you, you know,
what was
good.
That?
She goes good with crackers.
No, I wanted a strong.
Come on, I couldn't pass that.
I know.
Female character. I wanted to have that. I wanted to have someone who was a female who was smart and maybe smart younger and maybe smarter than some of the older guys around Sloan. His advisors. So she's young, and she's not as experienced in campaigns, but she has a fresh take on it all. And so I thank you, Bobby. And I have to, you know, like the candidate, have depth to the character, and I wanted female readers to relate well to Bree as either themselves or their daughter or their sister or their, you know.
Right.
Someone they could see, and frankly, you could see Bree Baker in today's political world.
Oh,
I mean, there's 1,000 Bree Bakers out there.
I'm sure there are. Well, we're going to have to kind of start winding this puppy down. The name of the book is Roll the Dice. And Mr. Abishak, if you would please tell us, we know we can get it at Amazon.
Yes, sir.
And all the online booksellers.
Right.
And what about brick-and-mortar bookstores?
Some Barnes & Nobles have it. But when people ask me, I say Amazon. I hate to say it because I love independent bookstores.
Yeah.
And I went to Las Vegas and I signed at an independent bookstore, signed at a couple of Barnes & Nobles in Las Vegas. But Amazon is the easiest.
Uh-huh.
And also it's great because you could look at the reviews and, and read the reviews and get something out of it.
And I did read your reviews, and there was most of them were really, really, really good. Even your bad reviews were really good.
Well, thank you. I think I only got 1 3-star.
Yeah, you did, but it still was a good review.
It was a good review, and the only reason she didn't give me a higher, I think, is she said it's more political drama than a political thriller. And I said, okay, fine.
Yeah,
when I read that.
Said, well, it didn't go as fast as a thriller.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
There weren't enough dead bodies for it to be a thriller,
well,
I guess.
That's not my problem, is it, Bobby? I can put dead bodies anywhere.
I know. Just add some dead bodies. It is a thriller.
What did John Sanford said? Oh, have a guy walk in the door with a gun. That always wakes up.
There you go.
Because we had John Sanford on the show not too long ago. And that's what he said. When things get a little tired, you know, he says, what do you do? He goes, well, I just put a guy in the door with a gun.
That'll liven things up.
It always does.
What happens?
Well, thanks for joining us. It's been a hoot having you. And, of course, your book is available on Amazon. It's Roll the Dice and Mr. Wayne Abishak. And if you would give our audience your email, if you would, please, and website.
Sure. The website is www.myname.wayne, W-A-Y-N-E, last name A, V like Victor, RASHOW.com. That's my webpage. I do blogs. And you can see me on Facebook with my name. And again, Roll the Dice on Amazon. And my email is walaw@sbcglobal.net. But, you know, check out the book. And Jim and Bobby and Bob, thank you very much. This was great.
Thank you so much for joining us. And hang tough. And Bob, great having you.
Hey, it was good being here. I loved it.
I'm telling you, you stepped into a great slot over there.
I'm having fun.
That's good. And Bobby, next week is 3 years.
Yes, I downloaded it today. I'll start reading it tonight.
next week we have writer. Actually, that's her name. Writer Wrong. And she will be with us in studio. And then the following week, Richard Polinelli will, of course, be calling in from Nebraska. And on the 31st, we have Roy Griffiths. So that pretty much rounds out our month. And let me see. Oh, that's right. Next week is a kickoff show for KWTF Radio. It'd be taking place at 6 o'clock here on LA Talk Radio, 6 cool. p.m. And it is on Channel 1. And it's just pretty much the irreverent look at the world as we see it today. And how it really, truly is. And we're going to call spades spades. And we know that Trump is a high card.
I got to tune in.
Jim, do I got 30 seconds to mention something?
Of course.
Yeah, I've just started a new program. Of course, my book series is called, my Western novels are Lancer Hero of the West.
Right.
And I'm getting ready to write the fifth in the series coming up in January. And I want my readers and listeners to contribute to the storyline.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just having to, you can go to my my blog, which is Lancer Hero of the West, and you can look that up, and the whole story's there about how to buy the books and everything, get some background, and what you need to do as far as helping me write this next story. I'd like some reader input. So
we can do that. We can do that. Oh, wait, real quick question. Wayne, have you ever woke up from a dream and remember the entire dream?
No, I remember fragments more than the
really?
Entire dream.
What about you, Bob?
Never. I still remember some of those dreams I had when I was a kid, but only portions.
Well, yeah, but those were, never mind.
What was that drummer's name you were talking about?
Which one? My cousin? Oh, Cena. Actually, my cousin was a drummer for the Fabulous Thunderbirds.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Okay, well, that's it for us. We've just pretty much butchered another Thursday night. And thank you for listening. This is LA Talk Radio. Of course, you've been listening to The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina in studio with Bob Brill. And on the phone, Bobby Jean Bell. And our guest tonight, Mr. Wayne Abershaw. And we hope you guys have a pleasant evening. And thanks for listening. And we'll be with you back again next week.